Reading in bed.
Right, Amanda, what are we doing today?
We're doing reading in bed.
Now, what episode are we up to, Amanda?
It's episode 53.
Correct. I think it's 53 anyway. So, does that sound, you can see everybody, it's how organised we are in the reading in bed camp. We keep losing count, don't we? So, Amanda.
I got the anchor page up and then the last one was 52.
So oh, are you really?
I can count.
Cheating then, aren't you? So, this is what happens when you do a podcast that's been going on for over 4 years now, particularly when you're married to the co-host. Now, she cheats on you all the time. Horrible.
What, with Keith, you mean?
Sutherland, yeah. Now, obviously, this we have to state for recording. Of course, I am Andy M. She is the Nicholson, Amanda Nicholson. Kiefer Sutherland has not having an affair with Amanda Nicholson. Despite the fact that she may think or wish.
In my dreams.
Like I said, anyway, we'll move on there now. Obviously, what is Reading in Bed, Amanda?
It's a book review podcast.
Yeah, as before, this is episode 53, so this is our fifth year now. Almost half through the fifth year. So now, what we do in bed, of course, is we review books. Sometimes we do them together, and today it's five books, and they're all doing separate books today. I've got three, Amanda's got two. Now, before we get to that, what have we got also on Amanda?
News.
Yes, now, ladies first, you do have news.
Yeah, I was on BBC Upload, not last Saturday, but the Saturday before that.
Yeah, which you can find on BBC Sounds app still at the moment. And what piece did you do there, Amanda?
Seagulls of the Gym.
Yeah. Now, tell us about the experience now, then, so people know. What is BBC Upload? Sorry, just so people don't know.
It's a local radio station, depending on where you are, from the BBC network. And you upload your work and tell them where you're from. So it goes to your local station. And if they like it, they call you up and play it and interview you afterwards.
Yeah, and that's what happened to you then, basically. I've won it with it. So I know you had a good time with that as well, didn't you, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you got any more news, Amanda, I'm not aware of?
No, I've got stuff coming up in the next few months, but I'll mention that close to the time.
Yeah, same for me as well, really. So we have got our open mic night to speak easy on this Thursday coming, which is what, the 5th of May? The Thursday, the 5th of May, isn't
yeah.
it? So, yeah, we're still running as normal in Chalton Cum Hardy in Manchester, and that's a special this time because it's actually part of Chalton Arts Festival. All slots are booked up, but you're welcome to come along and watch us at Dulcet at 7:30. Do you want my news, Amanda?
Yeah.
Bizarrely enough, what programme am I on this Saturday coming, Amanda?
BBC Upload.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting this, really, because your case, Amanda, you did a piece for one of your gym pieces, didn't you? Was it Vultures of the Gym you did, wasn't it?
Seagulls of the Gym.
Seagulls of the Gym, that was, yeah, because the Vultures of the Gym one's a bit ruder, so, yeah. But, yeah, one of the books we're going to do today, Amanda's one of the books on Neurodiverse. It was published by Flaptrap Press. I've got a poem in, and it's quite a big topic at the moment, neurodiverse, because I'm talking about dyspraxia. And I ended up sending my piece across recorded, and I'm on there this Saturday coming over as well. So, but anyway, Amanda, that's all our news, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are we going to do next?
I think we should review a book.
Would you like me to go first?
Yeah.
What do you want to know first?
The title and the author.
Okay, the book is by Arthur C. Clarke, and the book is called 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Okay, do you want to read the blurb?
Okay, it's quite short. I think the three books I'm doing today are quite short blurbs as well, actually. And this is probably the longest one, actually, as well. Blurb. On the moon, an enigma is uncovered. So great are the implications of the discovery for the first time. Men are sent out deep into our solar system. Long before their destination is reached, things begin to go horribly, inexplicably wrong. One of the greatest selling science fiction novels of our time, this classic book will grip you to the very end.
Oh, I've heard of this book before. I've never read it. I'm guessing it's quite old. What year was it written in?
Well, it came out, obviously, I know it came out on before Neil Armstrong went to the moon. I'll have to double check this for you. The film was 68 and it came out at the same time. And I think the novel It's probably around about the same time. So it's just, yeah. Yeah, 1968, the novel came out. We wrote in 67 and 66. So obviously just before we get to Neil Armstrong landed on the moon.
Okay. So reading it now in 2022, does it feel futuristic still, or does it feel like very set in the past?
Yeah, it was one of those ones where I've been reading a bit of old science fiction recently for various reasons, really. I think this was a more book that went on the science side of things more. Because obviously, like, if you remember last month, Amanda, I did a book called City Dinner by Cliff and DeSimac, and that was more ambiguous with the way the science is. This one started off intriguingly. The first couple of chapters were actually set in Africa, very, very early man. And then it jumped, after about three or four chapters, up to 1999, which was more obviously up to date then by that point. And it was weird, because how do you feel about a book, Amanda, when it starts off with, like, say, in the past, massively in the past, and it jumps forward about 6,000 years?
I don't know. I've always struggled with books like that. I feel a bit put off by them because the future, it doesn't feel like the kind of future that's realistic.
And it's a funny one with science fiction because, and this book, obviously we're at the stage now where it's set in 1999 and we're 23 years later. It's weird because you're looking at the book's dates, and this one, I think he got away with it, because a lot of it was actually out in space itself. And they got the book itself, obviously, if people have never read it, and it's an interesting book where it's basically on one of the moon's craters, a molecule is found that sends out a strong and mysterious signal when sunlight touches it for the first time, and then results in a signal coming from Saturn, is where the story really, really gets vivid. And it was like, obviously, because we've not got as far yet as traveling like to, you know, the outer planets, really, haven't we? So, yeah. Only got it as far as the moon, and it was really vivid. Whether it'd be as vivid in 30 years' time, 50 years' time, when we get to that stage, I think the science seemed to stand up really well. But in this book, all those years later, but obviously, Clark was known for being a real scientist, basically. That's why we lived in India, so it does stand up fairly well. It was an interesting book because I think the scope of it was really, really. It was, you know what I mean? Some books are really ambitious. Yeah. And I think you find this book, I'll come to it in the weaknesses more in a minute. But and you said already, you'd struggle, wouldn't you, with a book of this ambition, where it's moving along, it's covering so much ground. It's only quite a short book as well. I think it was 250 pages. Well, I think you find, what do you think nowadays if we do books like that? These go to 800-900 pages, don't they? So,
yeah.
This one, didn't it? It kept really, really brief. And it was respectful for that. I think that bit worked, certainly. So, but I said it was the prose. It was the last part of it when everything really went wrong with the spaceship. And then basically, I don't want to give tons away, but when the fatalities started happening, it was not like anything like Alien, if you ask it. It was just unfortunate things went wrong. It was very, very vivid when what was left on the crew in the last couple of chapters. I mean, they were trapped in Saturn, basically. It was interesting.
Yeah. How well were the characters written?
Should I go on to weaknesses?
Yeah.
It's probably, that's a weakness, to be honest with you, because it was one of those ones where there's somebody else who's a good read said this, and they were dead right. All the characters, borderline cartoon cutouts, and are largely interchangeable with each other. That was most of the background characters, apart from the main character and the robot, Hal. They were the most vivid people in the book, but everybody else, that was a problem. You know what I mean? We get that in a book sometimes. It's a real problem.
I've read books like that before.
Yeah, but it's some of the older science fiction. You find books dated, it's not the way you write nowadays. And I struggled, I have to be honest, with the first few chapters focusing on man from millions of years ago. And I've started to, I'll be honest with you, man, when you get that, you get a big jump like that, don't you? You start wondering whether it's in the car starting over every stage of mankind that's taken forever to get going. Yeah. Thankfully, it didn't, but it picked up gears fairly quick after that. But sometimes the book gets off to a weird start. You're a bit put off, aren't you?
Yeah.
Have you had that before when you've had a prologue that feels like it's going on for 60, 70 pages?
No, not that long.
Well, it's one that took a while to take a while, but it is what it is. What it is. So, as I said of it, but I think the book itself, the science in it, was really, really well done. It was like City, like I said last month, where it's certainly on the science side of science fiction, not like Alien with monsters attacking and stuff like that. It wasn't. It was looking at things in a bit more thoughtful way, and I respected it, the book, for that. You know, the vision of it was really, really good.
Did it feel realistic, like it could happen?
Yeah, it did actually. I'm sure it did. That was probably the strong part of the book. The characterization was a bit off, but the book itself, you believed in the journey all along, and that's what I felt myself like. It's very likely, like, man, if mankind found a signal, something like on the moon, would we do probably something akin to like what happens here when it leaves the Saturn? So yeah, I'd agree with agree. It did feel like it could happen.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to say before you give it a mark?
No, it's not. That's all my feedback.
Okay, so what do you give it out of 10?
Yeah, I'll just need sales. Like, I think it is a classic still. Obviously, I said, well, the book has dated it. It has definitely. I mean, books are 50 years old. They can do so. What do you reckon I give this out of 10 on? I'll let you have a guess.
I think it's going to be at least 7.
Eight.
Yeah, that's a recommendation then.
Yeah, so it's good. I enjoyed it. Generally did enjoy it. It was dated, but you know what I mean? I haven't. It lost a mark over the build-up, which did take forever. And I think the characterization was bad as well, so it lost a mark on that. But it's worth your time, right? Because it's only short. It's quite an easy book to read. So, right, Amanda, that's the end of part one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you got any clues for us to part two?
The king is coming.
Is it really? Hail the king. Well, hail Amanda then. She's the queen. See you all in a minute then for part two. Say bye, Amanda.
Bye.
Reading and bet. Hi guys, yes. Reading and Bet. Episode, what number is it, Amanda?
53.
She is Amanda Nicholson.
And he is Andy N.
Of course, one and only. Now over to Amanda for her first book this month. Right, Amanda, do the regular pattern. What is the book and who wrote it?
It's called Rose Madder and it's written by Stephen King.
No, I never heard of him. Who is he?
Some up and coming author. I think he's going to be big.
Yeah, is he going big as he was? Fair enough then. But you better tell us the blurb of the book first of all, Amanda, then.
Okay. Roused by a single drop of blood, Rose Daniels wakes up to the chilling realization that her husband is going to kill her, and she takes flight with his credit card. Alone in a strange city, Rosie begins to build a new life. Meets Bill Steiner and she finds an odd junk shop painting Rose Madder, which strangely seems to want her as much as she wants it. But it's hard for Rosie not to keep looking over her shoulder. Rose maddened and on the rampage, Norman is a corrupt cop with a dog's instinct for tracking people and he's getting close. Rose can feel how close he is getting.
Hey then, no, obviously, seriously, we have to start for a state for we've been this for Karen. I was joking, obviously, over who is Stephen King. I know people obviously. Do you want to tell people, Amanda, obviously, what Stephen King means to you as a writer before we start?
He's like my idol as an author. I mean, I know I don't do novels anymore, but I do like writing horror.
Yeah, no, I said is yeah, I know he's your idol, like you said with it. So that's why. So now. Obviously, see, Rose Madder is one of his more perhaps lesser known novels, really, and from his pop middle period, really, isn't it? So,
Yeah.
I know there's been a film of it. I think I've seen that actually, it was a while ago. But what made you want to go and read this book?
I was looking for a book on audiobook because I read this on audiobook and I came across this one and I thought it sounds interesting. It's one that I've not read of his.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd read that one before straight away, I must admit. So, but anyway, then, okay, that being the case, Amanda, we better ask you, what did you like about this book and what didn't you like?
Okay, so it's told in the third person, but it's actually got two narrators.
Oh, that's
So
unusual.
when it's focusing on Rose, it's got a woman narrator who's called Blair Brown. And when it's focusing on the husband, Norman, there's a male narrator, but he's not listed. But I did a Google search, and according to someone on Reddit, it's actually Stephen King himself reading the male parts.
Well, that's unusual. That's unusual. So, yeah, I see what you mean. That is unusual straight away. So, very bizarre. So, okay. So, obviously, I have to ask you this before we start then. I'll ask you a question about this. Was it quite a long audio book for Stephen King? Because I know people are wondering, we did do one on The Stand, didn't you? Some episodes ago on that one. Reading about to tell that went on for 48 hours, wasn't it, as an audio book? Yeah. Am I right with that?
Yeah, that was job in lockdown, so I just had time to do that and just sit there and listen to it.
I'm presuming that I don't recall this being as long a book as that. So how long an audio book was this one?
I think this was about 17 hours long, so it's fairly short for him.
Yeah, completely so. Right, well, give us a strength then before we start.
I think the characters were written really well. There's a character, Rose, who leaves her abusive husband. And then there's Norman, the husband. And as it goes on, it shows how evil he is. And I'm not going to give any spoilers, but it slowly reveals stuff about him. And you just think, you know, this is going to be difficult to stop this guy from tracking her down, finding her and killing her. And I don't know if you remember, but I did an article for Authors Publish a few months ago about how to write bad characters, as in like bad guys, not bad characters.
Yes, I do remember that article. Well,
yeah, and one thing I said was like having the characters fleshed out so they're not completely all bad, because usually there's some sort of good, even if it's not much. But in this case, I think it actually worked that there just didn't seem to be any redeeming features about the husband, and he was just pure evil, the things that he was doing.
Yeah.
For anybody else, it might not work, but it works because it's Stephen King.
Yeah, no, of course. Steve, I mean, to some degree, Stephen King gets away with it sometimes, only because of his name. Yeah, I do understand and get you with that. It's very interesting. Interesting. So, that one. So, tell us a bit more about the book then. So, obviously, then, like, who's out of the two characters then? How did they feel then that the fact, like, the second character didn't get named? We said it was Stephen King himself. So, did that confuse you a little bit to start with in the book?
Well, not really, because it's from the husband's point of view, so we know who it's supposed to be, but I didn't know who the narrator was, because they only listed the one, and I had to track down to find out who the second one was. But I didn't have any problems with him. I saw a few people on Reddit saying that he didn't do it very well, but I thought he did it perfectly. It seemed to match the character.
No, I get you completely right. So, okay, so... What was the pacing like in the book? Was it pretty good pace in this book?
Yeah, there's a lot of build-up and tension because she leaves her husband and she's there having her own life, and then it switches back to the husband, and you can see he's slowly getting closer to tracking her down and finding out where she is. And then you see some of the things that he's doing, and you just think, how's she going to get out of this when he finally finds her? And then you look and see the 7 hours left and think, well, he's got to find her eventually.
Yeah, it sounds like it's one of those ones, doesn't it? So, yeah, she can't hide forever then, can't you? So, yeah, no, I get you completely with that. So, like, there's one of those sort of ones where I think sooner or later she has to find him, doesn't she? So, whether he means to or not, yeah, I get you completely. I agree with you completely. I love it. Interesting. Very, very interesting. So, that's why with this one. So, okay, what else did you like about this book?
I'm going to move on to slight bad points now. Because I don't know if this is a genuine gender, but I see it as more of a sort of fantasy thriller. And what's I think the thriller part of it works, but the way it ends, the outcome, which I'm not going to spoil, it relies more on the fantasy side of it, and that just seemed to trail off a bit, and it was really hard to keep up with what was going on with it. And I don't think it was needed. It would have worked just as a thriller and just cut the fantasy bits out and find another way to get to the conclusion.
Yeah. So I get it. But it sounded like it was probably a bit longer than basically, wasn't it? Which is, I'm not going to say anything else further on that. So, yeah, I get you. Now, is there anything else that you need to discuss with this book?
No, that's everything I've got to say.
Okay, well, we better wrap this part up then. I'm presuming... Obviously, mark-wise, you did enjoy this, but it's not far from your favourite Stephen King book, am I right?
Yeah, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
So am I right saying it's not one of your favourite? You liked it, but it wasn't your most favourite book by King, was it?
No, it wasn't my favourite one. I'm not sure what my favourite one would be, but this wasn't it.
Stand problem.
Okay, I just want to sit through 48 hours of that again.
It's worth telling people, actually. I used to have the hardback of that when I read it. Ooh, when I was 14 or 15. And it was a great doorstopper. Because 1,300 pages thick, the uncut version was. I remember it well. God. But anyway, so 8 out of 10. Love a recommendation. Who's next?
You're next.
Do you want any hints?
Yeah.
I can't think of any, actually. So, no, I was like, it's, you'll see what I mean. It's wrote by two very famous people, this next book. Unexpected people as well. That's a good way of putting it, Amanda, isn't it, as well? So.
Yeah.
Right. See you in part three. Say bye, Amanda.
See you on the other side.
Break on through to the other side. No, see you in a minute. I'm not carrying on. Make a fool of myself. See you in a minute.
Read in a bed.
Welcome back to Reading in Bed with me, Amanda Nicholson, and...
Andy N. What episode are we, Amanda?
53. Stop asking me.
Just making sure you knew, so... Right, whose turn is it now?
You're next. Well, you're now.
You're now, isn't it? Not your
next. Doesn't sound as good, does it?
No, it doesn't sound as good at all. Anyhow, so, right, what do you want to know about me?
The title and the author.
Okay. The authors, the book is called Renegades, Born in the USA by Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen.
Okay. And is there a blurb for that?
There is, yes. This is the longest blurb I've got today as well, but not too bad. Two longtime friends share an intimate and urgent conversation on life, music, and their endearing love of America, with all of its challenges, contradictions, in this stunningly produced expansion of their groundbreaking Higher Ground podcast, featuring more than 350 photographs, exclusive bonus content, and never-seen-before arcane material. Renegades, Born in the USA is a candid, revealing, and entertaining dialogue between President Barack Obama and legendary musician Bruce Springsteen. They explore everything from their origin stories and career-defining moments to our country's polarising politics and the growing distance between the American dream and American reality. Filled with full-colour photographs and rare arcane material, it is a compelling and beautifully illustrated portrait of two outsiders, one black and one white, looking for a way to connect their unconventional searches for meaning, identity and community with the American story itself.
Okay,
where do you want to go now?
So start with the good points then.
Okay. It has to be stated, obviously, and I know you've heard part of this, Amanda. This actually came from a podcast that was released back in during lockdown itself, wasn't it, Amanda? Do you remember playing part of this to you?
Yeah, when I first heard that they teamed up together, I thought it's an unlikely friendship, but when you hear them talking to each other, it seems to work, and you can see, even though they're in different careers, they've kind of got the same ethics, I think.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where it's really interesting, like it's, you're right, when you see them together, you think they'd be completely different people, but they're not. They've got a lot of similarities in their upbringings, really, because they both had a lot of trouble with the father. And it's like, and they've had quite complicated relationships. Like in Springsteen's case, obviously, he was married before, obviously. And then he met up with his wife later on, and he's had three kids by her. And like with Barack Obama, he's got two daughters by his wife. The kids, you can make out, all been brought up prettily. You know what I mean? They're quite low-keyly. And yeah. look like what I can hear, all three are very good. All five of them are really quite down-to-earth children. And that says a lot about them as people, really, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
That's when book works at its best when the similarities between a pair of them are truly really interesting places spread out among the book, with the book talking frankly about their upbringings. And like I said before, both of them in hard relationships with the fathers and their opposites in their relationships with the women who became their wives. And did you know, actually, it's a good one point that came out in the notes in the book, the pair of them actually caused an unholy panic for Obama's bodyguards, because he's still got bodyguards, obviously, ex-president.
Yeah.
They recorded part of the original podcast on the road driving. They were in one of Springsteen's pink Cadillacs. He's got a couple of Cadillacs. And they didn't tell the bodyguards they were going off. And apparently you can hear it in the script, like he's ignoring phone calls from all, panicking where he's gone. I don't think they went very far. But it was really interesting, like I said, Because Springsteen's into his 70s now, and Barack Obama, so unbelievably, just hits in his early 60s. Because there's like 10 years between them.
Yeah.
And it's to grow up with different side of things. And it's just really surprising what they're actually like as people. Because I think they're quite different people. But there is similarities for it straight away. So, yeah. I mean, you think really, because if you think really, because both of them have got quite a grounded interest in the working class man. But Springsteen, you'd expect it, wouldn't you, if you know his songs? But Barack Obama is interesting because I wasn't that familiar with his work before, to be honest with you. But if you hear his voice, he's got a beautiful voice, Obama has. And you can see why he was president, because he was, you know what I mean, where his voice is that sort of voice. I've only heard two or three authors that are capable of that. Neil Gaiman's another one, where you can sit there and listen to them for hours just talking about how they wash their pots and make dinner and stuff like that. It's really, really enrapturing. But the book's similar. It's split into time. I think it was 8 parts in the podcast. And I've just split each chapter into parts of the podcast. Like I say, each podcast was cut a little bit and mixed. This is more of the uncut version, just to clarify certain points, really. And it was fascinating. Really, really interesting book it was. I don't think it was a book where, if necessary, tons actually got, you know, said, basically. And it certainly wasn't a book that had plots behind it and stuff like that, so it didn't. But it was just two men talking about their lives, and you could see how they're connected as friends, basically, because they've been friends for, what, I think it's 20-odd years now they have, so it's really been interesting.
Okay. So is there any more good points you want to talk about before you talk big on any bad points?
Yeah, it was really, because it was... I found it... The part of the book surprised me was there's also quite lengthy segments in the book where they talk about masculinity and how it is changing in current society. And I wasn't expecting that. And it was like, and it was really interesting to show how basic fatherhood transformed both their lives. Because obviously Obama was always a very focused man going into politics. And I think his wife had to basically bring up the two girls. He wasn't around.
Yeah,
you think it's similar to a Springsteen, really, because his wife had 3 kids. He's got 2 boys and a daughter. And he was out touring, wasn't he, in the 90s when they were all born. So it's like fatherhood from a distance. It was quite, they're very candid over it. And I felt like I knew them both by the end of the book, certainly.
Okay,
that's all I've got to say about the strengths.
Okay, so shall we move on to weaknesses?
Yeah, it's not a lot on the weaknesses. The podcast itself, I think it's 8 hours long, if my memory's correct. It was something like 8 or 10 hours long, and it proved the book was very easy to read. I got through it very quickly. But what they did in the book was, they expanded the conversation slightly and cleaned it up, symmetry, for the sake of clarity. But there's lots of pictures and extracts and speeches, songs, you know, etc. throughout the book.
Yeah.
Which, if I'm honest, failed to add much to the book to me. I feel there's several occasions that they were padding in the book. Probably half of them shouldn't have even been in the book in the first place. And then he had all the footnotes, and you got to about, what, 80% into the book, you're thinking. You get to the end of it and thought, oh my God, there's about 100-odd pages of footnotes there and stuff. And they weren't really that set. Some cases weren't needed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it probably felt like they were padding out, and it perhaps shouldn't have done that, to be honest with you, but that's just my opinion.
Okay, so do you want to give it a mark out of 10?
Yeah, okay. What do you reckon I'm going to give this?
I think it's probably going to be an 8 or a 9.
It's a 9. It really is a good book. I'm not sure if I preferred the podcast more or the book, but they're both are excellent either way. So it's not one. I know some people have been buying the book and following it through the podcast word for word, and I thought to myself, I don't think I could do that. Could you do that, Amanda?
No, I mean, obviously the podcast is going to change from the book. Because you're talking, aren't you? And you don't just like read it out of the book.
Yeah, that's what I found. I found that a bit weird, really, when I heard that one, but it was up to them. But like I said, it's one or the other for me. So I don't think I'd read the book again. Plus, I might listen to podcasts again. But they're both worth checking out their own way, I think. So, okay, Amanda. That's Bender Part 3. You're next.
I am. I'm next.
What are you going to give us any hints?
We're going into Poetry Corner.
Oh, Poetry Corner. Yeah, I've done it ages, actually, myself. And I need to dig a poetry book up for some point again. So hang around. We shall see you in a minute. Say bye, Amanda.
Bye.
Reading in bed.
Welcome back to Reading in Bed, episode 53. I am Andy N.
She is. I am Amanda Nicholson.
Are you sure?
I am. I think so.
No. I know I'm definitely Andy N. So. Right, okay. Poet's Corner. Over to Amanda. What book are you reading today?
Okay, so this is called Neurodiverse. And it's by various writers, and it's been brought out by Flapjack Press.
Yeah, now, do we need to state this one before we start, Amanda, hadn't we? So, obviously, I'm actually in this book, actually, so I've got a poem in it about the dyspraxia. Now, I'm going to keep out the discussion of this book as much as I can. Now, it's up to Amanda's prerogative when she wants to talk about my poem in the book or not. But so, have you got the book to hand, Amanda, for the blurb, then? All right.
I've got a little blurb here from Amazon.
Go for it. What's the blurb?
An anthology of poetry featuring neurodiverse writers. Neurodivergence is defined as a variance in cognitive or neurological function that is considered typical or normal. This is poetry about the neurodivergent experience, specifically by neurodivergent writers, providing a powerful and diverse representation with positive, authentic, and progressive portrayals. With specific sections and introductory notes about definitions, issues, and societal perceptions, neurodiverse is open to all who wish to learn about neurodiversity and to all lovers of poetry. Editors are Janine Booth, Kate Fox, Rob Steventon, and Paul Needs.
Right, now, people obviously know we're reading in bed. I normally ask Amanda what made her want to get this book, but long story short, what it was. When I got accepted for this anthology, we had a couple of copies sent to us, so I give Amanda my spare copy. So we have to do it a different way, Amanda, don't we? So tell us about then, because obviously, with you not being registered to suffer with neurodiverse, what did you learn from this book then?
Okay, so you gave me the book initially, and obviously the cover's good. I thought it looks good, but I didn't really sit down to read it. And I went to the reading home theatre that you did. And I realised how good the poetry in there was. Obviously, yours is good, which I'm going to briefly mention later. And Janine Booth as well, it was her poem that struck me, which I'm trying to... I've made a note of it and I can't find the title of it here.
I'm not going to look down, so...
Yeah, we had to let them go. Because even though I'm not classed as neurodiverse in the conditions that are listed, I'm an introvert. And I didn't really understand anything about it until a few years, really. It just, everything changed after that when I accepted who I was, because I was trying to force myself to be something everybody else wanted me to be, and it just made me completely miserable. So this poem that she read out was about like all the different employees that were good at their job, but they were let go because they didn't fit in. And it was all stuff unrelated to the job, like they didn't like the same things, they had a different personality, but they were good at the job, but they let them go because they just said, oh, they're a bit weird, they're different. And that struck a chord with me. And there's quite a few other poems in the book that I relate to there.
Yeah, that's what I found, certainly. I've not got the book to hand, and I don't really want to go into it in a great deal of detail, but you're right, It was certainly when I got the book myself, it was a really interesting book. The fact like it is, like, did you know Amanda obviously is neurodiverse? It was originally diagnosed in the late 90s, wasn't it? If my memory is correct, and yeah, and I got to, as I said, registered dyspraxia in 1999, and it wasn't something that I hadn't heard of this term to relatively recently, and that's why I found it interesting. That like it does seem to be a hotbed topic at the moment. Have you noticed that yourself, have you?
Yeah. Your poem in that, Between Then and Now, and then in brackets, A Life Before and After the Discovery of Dyspraxia, where you're going about all the different jobs that you went through and how they didn't work out for one reason or another. I think that's just relatable to people, whether it's like an introvert like me or with like neurodiverse with one of the conditions that are classified under that. Yeah. It's just like people are expecting you to do something, and because you don't fit into that category, they just think, oh, he's useless, he can't do that. And it's like you might be perfectly good at doing that, but you just might need to do it a different way, that's all.
Yeah, I think that's what this book's been really, really good at, to answer with it, and I agree with you. It's raised a lot of awareness through a lot of really good poetry straight away with it. So now, obviously, we can't really give a weakness on it because there's so many writers involved in it. But I would like to ask you, Amanda, was there any poems that really stood out to you in the book?
It was mostly the work ones because it's split into different sections. So there's a lot of work ones that I related to. And I think even if you don't, if you just class yourself as normal, whatever normal is, and you don't class yourself as neurodiverse, I think it's a good book that people could pick up because they could get an understanding of it and think, well, you know, that person I sit next to at work or the person I see every week at the pub or whatever who I thought was a bit weird, it's like, this, it's nothing wrong with that. They're not harming anyone. And it's just who they are. And,
yeah, no.
I think they should judge them, that's all.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Amanda. That's why the book itself is at its best, certainly, in relation to that, definitely. So, now, is there anything else you need to talk about this book, Amanda, before we go into any weaknesses, if there is any?
No, the only thing, other thing I've put in my notes is just about it's a really positive book. I think everyone can benefit from it in some way or another.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's an excellent point, that one, Dean. I think you can learn, everyone can learn something from this book, Sam. I do agree with you. Excellent stuff. Okay, have you got a mark for this book?
Yeah, I'm giving it a 9 out of 10.
Excellent. No, it's for, I've read a few Flapjack Press books, and it's probably my favourite book to date. There's in respect to a great press for having the guts to do this, because I think it's a difficult book to sort out for submissions. And do you think it was Mandarin, really, probably for them?
Yeah, because it's like they're not all going to relate to you, but the ones that don't relate to you are going to relate to somebody else. So that's a difficult job to sort them out, I think.
No, great respect to them, definitely, for that. So, right, Amanda, that is the end of part four, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who's you, is it your next or my next? Part five.
Next.
I'm next, yeah. Next one, I'm not going to even spoil a hint away this one, but this one, next book is an adult content book. So it is Monster by Stephen Crane. I'm going to admit that now. There is topics in his next book are a bit hard hitting. So be warned for the final part of this episode. Okay, Amanda, say bye.
Bye.
See you all in a minute.
Read in bed.
Welcome back to Reading in Bed. He's Andy N, and I'm.
She is.
Who are you?
It's Amanda Nicholson, okay? Right. Who's reading now, Amanda?
You all know.
We know, yeah, of course. Now, as I advised before, this last book is a bit more an adult topic, to be honest with you. So, it does carry a disclaimer, okay, before we go on any further. Book itself, what do you want to start with, Amanda?
The title, you've already said the author, haven't you?
Yeah, it's Stephen Crane. Maggie, A Girl of the Streets.
Okay, so do you want to read the blurb?
Yeah, it's a very short blurb, this one indeed. It's the longest blurb I could find for the book. So, Maggie, A Girl of the Streets, is Stephen Crane's first novel. It's a story of a beautiful young girl living in the slums in New York in the late 19th century. Maggie, A Girl of the Streets, is a shockingly explicit portrait of the brutal conditions that existed in the poverty-stricken slums of New York.
Okay, so what made you want to read this book?
Well, if you people obviously remember last month, we talked about Burning Boy by Paul Auster, which was his biography of Stephen Crane. And that nice short book that was on for just over 800 pages. And it has to be said, I knew of Stephen Crane. I came across his name a few times when I was at university in the late 90s and early 2000s, but I hadn't read any of his books. And after you've read, would you do the same here, Amanda? If you read a massive biography in somebody, would you be curious on the writer, wouldn't you, afterwards, once you've read it?
If I enjoyed it, then yeah, I'd want to find out more.
Yeah, I did. So that's what I did. And I hadn't read any of his books. I've got the Red Badge of Courage to read at some point, and that'll probably crop up and read in a couple of episodes' time. But that's it for this time. I want to start with Maggie, A Girl of the Streets first. And this is only quite a short novella. It's a 92-page novella. So now, for this one, Amanda, should I go into strengths?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to read out a quote that's come off a fellow reviewer. whose name I've not wrote down here, Goodreads, who said the following, and I think this sums it up really well. This is perhaps the most sordid short novel I have ever read. The journey to depravity, prostitution, death, forced by the loneliness, double morale, and necessity of a poor, beautiful girl born in a miserable suburb in New York. So it gives you a clue, Amanda, straight away what you're going to get there, doesn't it?
Yeah, nice, happy comedy.
Bloody isn't. It was, it's one of those, well, if I look at my notes here in this, I've not actually got strengths and weaknesses. I'm going to have to go for it all together because I think it's, we've been in quite a short book. It's easier to do it that way. But I think sordid and not a comedy are two excellent descriptions of a short 92-page novel. Like, it's grim. It's really, really grim. And it's also quite shocking because I dropped a hint in last month's episode about the girl's mother who gets kicked to death by a pimp. And it was the scenes in it like that. It's awful to read. It really is. Okay, it shows you really, doesn't it? You think really that was what, 130 odd years ago. And it shows you how far society has changed in some ways, I think. I wonder if it's quite a short period. But like I said, but in some ways that society's not moved on that much. And because there's a blame game in this book, there is. And it's, if you read up on it, what I can understand at the time is like the rich people looked at the poor people like that, thinking, well, it's their fault. They're in that problem. And I thought to myself, that's a horrible way to look at people, that is.
Yeah. There's still a lot of that today as well.
Yeah, but there is. And it's, that's why I wanted to read this book today, because the poverty it goes on about. And it's not, we're not touching on politics here, we're talking about life. I don't, some ways in America and in England, I don't think it's moved on that much. That's why it was like, we got like, back then it was like poverty, alcoholism and disease were not only rampant, but blamed entirely on the victims themselves. And I think we've got, after coming out of COVID like we have, I think we're in that direction, Amanda. What do you want to think there?
Yeah, it's just like the typical response, like, you know, work yourself out of it. Or like the modern response, you know, cancel your Netflix, stop going to the gym, as if that's going to change anything.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of this book's like. A lot of that book was touched on some of the danger, obviously, different area, different lifestyle, but the similarities. We're on the verge of the modern world in there, and it still shows you how barbaric people are and can be even to this very day. And that's what the book's like. It is a difficult book to read. For 92 pages, it took me a month, it did. And a lot, do you want to know what the problems out of this book, Amanda, were?
Yeah.
It was a dialogue. The dialogue was like, what I could understand, they wrote in very sort of dialogue at the time for people that lived in that New York era. And it was really, really quite difficult to read because the descriptions were stood up test time, but the dialogue was really, really hard. And I struggled with the dialogue, really, really struggled with that dialogue of this book. It was a difficult book to read for that.
Did it feel realistic for that time, though?
Yeah, I think it did. Obviously, we weren't there, was it? So,
yeah.
That's why. I think with the dialogue being so hard to read, it was almost impossible to follow in places. And I have to be honest, it made me glad the book wasn't double in length because it took me a month to read 92 pages. You imagine if it had been 400 or 500 pages with dialogue was almost incomprehensible in places. I think it would have been a real nightmare, don't you, with that?
I think it's a difficult one because if you had the dialogue more modern, then you get people saying it's not realistic and it wasn't how they spoke back then. So you can't really win.
No, can't win either way with it. And that was the problem I had with it, really, John Shea. It was his first book. And I think it showed in some ways it was his first book, if you know what I mean. Because I understand his later books, like The Red Badge of Courage, is really, really quite a different beast of a book. But I say it was a difficult book to read, and it was interesting. That's a good way of putting it, so.
Okay, so is there any more you want to say?
No, not really, because like I said, it was like, I think it followed all the buttons where you saw the girl going from A to B and getting dragged into really quite horrible situations at the end of it. And the ending, well, is expected, really, to be honest with yourself. But, no, it's worth a read, I think, so.
So what would you give it out of 10?
What do you reckon?
I think you can give it a recommendation.
Yeah, it's only just got it, because the dialogue caused me all kinds of problems. It gets a 7, because I think it's the book everyone should read. But to be warned is one you're going to struggle with. But is that the best way of putting it, do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the end of that. So, all right, guys and girls, that is the end of Reading Bed episode 53, isn't it, Amanda?
Yeah.
I don't want you to know what you're doing for episode 54 yet. Have you got any hints for us?
Neither do I. I'm going to try and find something cheerful, I think, because I think people are still in counselling from last month's episode.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I said it is, yeah. But I said it is, we had even really, had, well, the Renegades book I had was pretty, probably was pretty upbeat, and I think the 2001 was a bit of a tragedy, but yeah. I can. Would you like me to reveal to people one of the books is going to be for next month?
Yeah.
It's I've just finished off last week, actually. Looking for my notes for the next ep. Yeah. Miss Pellegrini's Home for Peculiar Children by Ransom Riggs. That's like a fantasy non. What do you call it? What's the name for it now? Mine's gone blank. It's like a teen book, basically. Yeah. Where it came out as a film a couple of years ago by Tim Burton. So I've read the book version of it. So that's one of my books that's going to be for next month, certainly. So, and I've got two. I'm reading something else among which may make the grade. So we'll see. Right, Amanda. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going now.
Going. Okay. What are you going to say to everybody?
Bye, everyone.
See you at WhatsApp. How do you want? Amanda?
Yeah, I said bye, everyone.
I was halfway as well, so I was going to hear what you said then. I'm going deaf. Go on, to that. Don't have daft, don't ask, right? See you all next time, guys. Say bye again, Amanda.
See you on the other side of next month.
True. See you then, guys. Stay safe.
Reading in bed. 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 Reading in bed.